Well, that was better, wasn't it? Shemi Ojeleye was great. Jason Tatum joined a historic list. And I'm going to talk about it here on the Thursday Locked On Celtics podcast. Millie's Let's Go. Raina J's back with the vengeance back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, it's the best way. Melly. I'll tell you, the Boston Celtics really needed this one. It's just, I don't care about the circumstances. I don't care about Cleveland missing guys. This was a game the Celtics just needed. And maybe the adversity within the game was better for them. I don't know, but they needed this. I'm John Corrales of MassLive.com. Boston Celtics beat the Cleveland Cavaliers 112-106 in Cleveland, and it was important. It was important to bounce back from that crap fest against the Brooklyn Nets. The way that game ended, you could tell it was wearing on guys. You can tell it wore on Brad Stevens. I mean, I played you the audio after the game where he just was clearly upset, and you could see in his face when he was talking after the game that, you know, he was spent. He had expended a lot of emotional energy over the past few days, and this was good. The Celtics needed to come away with this win, and they did. And now we can get back on track, we hope, with a little bit more of a healthy roster. The Celtics came into this game without Kemba, which we knew, without Gordon Hayward, which we sort of expected, without Jaylen Brown, which we also sort of expected, but also Jaylen Brown's going to be out for at least a week, so that sucks. But Jason Tatum came back, which was good. Marcus Smart played, no suspension. As of now, no fine that was announced by the NBA, which is weird. The NBA is kind of like letting guys get away with some of these things, letting them express themselves, I guess they can say, but it's not out of the question that they do hit Smart with a fine. But at this point, I mean, they can't suspend him. He's already played a game, so I would assume if they were going to suspend him, that was going to already happen. But anyway, the Celtics without three of their starters and facing a bad Cleveland team that was also very shorthanded, came in and kind of struggled a little bit. They didn't do certain things well. They didn't defend the rim very well, which is a concern. They didn't rebound very well. They gave up another big offensive rebounding night, 17 offensive rebounds for the Cavaliers, who did not have Tristan Thompson. So usually that's a Tristan Thompson thing, but the offensive rebounds went to Kevin Love and Larry Nance. And obviously Kevin Love's a good rebounder, but I mean, they gave up a ton of offensive rebounds. Three to Ante Zizic. I mean, like, the Celtics, again, you can look the other way on certain aspects of this where Boston was also shorthanded. So, but you still have a pattern that's developed of giving up offensive rebounds over the past few games and giving up shots at the rim over the past few games. And that has to stop. Regardless of who's on the floor, you can still rotate. You can still box out. You can still aggressively rebound. I mean, those are things that, regardless of your talent level, if you're an NBA player or whatever player, whatever level you're at, you can get on the floor. You can, if you're on there, you can box out. You can put a butt on somebody's leg and push and box a guy out. And the Celtics have had some problems doing that lately. So, but aside from that, and aside from letting Colin Sexton go off for 41 points on 17 of 30 shooting, the Celtics did a few good things. Jason Tatum scored 32 points. He's 11 of 24 in this game, 5 of 10 from 3. Can we just take a second here just to really appreciate the shot profile change for Jason Tatum? The fact that he's going out there and taking so many threes this season. Remember before the season started, we said all he's got to do is just change his shot profile and he'll average over 20 points a game. Well, last year he took 3.9 threes per game. This year he's taking 7. So he's nearly doubling his three-point attempts per game and hitting them at overall for the season, almost 40%, which gets him closer to his rookie year where he was shooting 43.5%. He's shooting 50% from the field since the All-Star break. 50% from three since the All-Star break. He's averaging like 33 points a game since the All-Star break. He has just decided, you know what? I'm going to be a 30-point-a-game scorer. And that's what he's doing. 32 points in 5 straight games. Only Larry Bird and John Havlicek have done that for the Celtics. 32 points in 5 straight games. That's nice company. And it's not a fake list. It's not putting sliders of certain age or whatever. It's, you know, the number 32 is, you know, a little bit arbitrary. Just a little bit. You know, you pump that slider up to 32 rather than 31. But still, 32 points in 5 straight games. Only 2 other Celtics have done that. Considering the history of the Boston Celtics, that's pretty good. That's a pretty good run for Jason Tatum. It's a better run, a better offensive run than so many other great offensive players in this team's history. So, and he just does it so casually. He just does it like, eh, you know what? I'm just going to take this step back three and drill it in your face. Don't worry about it. I'm going to get this ball in the post and then take this fadeaway. And he's just so long that watching him hit those shots, it's just ridiculous. If you go to Mass Live, and I know I'm always pushing Mass Live because, you know, if you read my stuff, that helps me stay employed. But you don't even have to read it. Just go to masslive.com/Celtics. I mean, you should read it, but there's a photo. I just want you to see the picture that I used in the 10 things where Jason Tatum is taking that sidestep three, and just look at the distance he's covering. And you don't realize it in the course of a game, but that sidestep three that he's taking, he covers so much ground. It's impossible to defend. The advent of the sidestep three, and this is James Harden's impact on the league. The advent of this shot and guys perfecting this shot, I don't know how you defend it, especially when it's Jason Tatum and especially when he's going to his right and stepping into a shot that, I mean, you have to beat him to that spot, but you have to cover him straight up. Like, just by the time you are in front of him and he takes that sidestep, step back, whatever, like, I don't know how you defend it. At that point, you just hope that he misses. And it's hard. It's easier to defend guys who are maybe a little smaller. You can kind of play them to that dominant hand, but if Jason Tatum continues to take that shot and make that shot, you're going to see defenses try to defend him in weird ways, almost like they defend Harden. But here's the thing. You can't do that against the Celtics at full strength because his teammates are Kemba Walker, Gordon Hayward, and Jaylen Brown. You know, not Daniel House or Eric Gordon, who are nice players, but you're talking about 3 other dynamic players, 2 dynamic wings, and a 4-time All-Star in Kemba Walker. Like, the way that Tatum has emerged and some of these shots that he takes and the casual efficiency has been just amazing to watch. I haven't even talked about Semi Ojeleye yet. Semi Ojeleye had a great game. I'll talk about that in a moment.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Semi Ojeleye came into this game and just started dropping hellfire from deep. It was awesome. And good to see that Semi Ojeleye got an opportunity to play big minutes and knew that he could fire away because the Celtics needed somebody to take those shots. And he stepped up. Now, he hit one in the first quarter, but the second quarter was where he really went off, where he was 4 of 4 from the field, 3 of 3, and 12 points in the second quarter for Semi Ojeleye, who had 15 at the half. And unfortunately, got kneed right in the nuts. I mean, just so hard that he went back to the locker room. He didn't shake it off, and he didn't come out at halftime, and they called his return questionable. That's how hard he got hit in the groin. But he did come back, and he ended up with a career-high 22 points, which, I mean, just phenomenal for Semi Ojeleye. And he did a lot for this team besides the shooting. He had 6 rebounds. He had a couple of assists. He was part of the Jason Tatum kind of like overflow. And I talked about Tatum scoring in the first segment. How about Tatum's passing? 6 assists in this game, 1 shy of a career best. And Ojeleye was the beneficiary, not directly of one of the, like, he got one of those 6 assists, but Tatum did such a good job in getting rid of the ball in double teams that the ball worked around, and it wasn't necessarily directly Semi Ojeleye getting the pass from Tatum, but I'm in the morning or at some point I'll look at the secondary assists, and I'm sure Tatum has a few more secondary assists, the quote-unquote hockey assists. And Ojeleye was there, spacing the floor, getting open shots, getting open looks, making the defense pay for paying too much attention to Jason Tatum. And that's just so huge, and you can tell the guys are so happy for Semi Ojeleye because he's a genuinely good guy. Brad Stevens was like, yeah, he's the best. You know, if you're down, he's going to be in your corner. I mean, Semi is beloved, and for good reason. I mean, I don't think there's a malicious bone in his body. He works his ass off. When he gets a DNP, he disappears into a weight room and just destroys the weight room so he can get a good workout in. He works hard in practice. He's constantly shooting. He's always shooting with Gordon Hayward. He's out there. He's working and he's trying his best. And it's good to see him have games like this because it just increases the likelihood of him sticking around. And if you remember the beginning of the season, it was unclear if he was going to stick around. I mean, there were times early in this year where it felt like the Celtics were just kind of like playing him to see, all right, are we going to get anything out of this guy or not? I remember Sacramento so in the first few games of the season, he did basically nothing, where he got a few minutes here or there, and just didn't do much. And against Sacramento, I just remember having a conversation of, is it, what are we doing with Semi Ojeleye? What's going on with Semi Ojeleye? It wasn't with somebody with the team, but it was at that game. And there was a feeling like, all right, they've got to play him to figure out, are they going to keep him? Are they going to trade him? Are they just going to cut him? What's going on? And he had struggled so much. In October, November, I mean, he went a long time without making a shot, without hitting a shot, with, you know, not taking the shots he was supposed to be taking. And then in that Sacramento game, he started hitting threes. And I remember that was it, 3 of 4 in that game, scored 11 points. One of three times, by the way, that he scored double digits. Scored 11 in that game. He scored 11 against the 76ers and then 22. So he basically combined those other two double-digit games in this game. But point is that beginning of the season, there was talk of like, all right, well, Shemmy's just not working out. And then all of a sudden he started to hit his threes. And he'd only get like a couple a game, but he'd hit one, he'd hit two, and now you see a little bit more of him kind of proving that he has value. You know, and I was asked today on the radio, who can Brad Stevens trust? And I know he trusts Semi Ojeleye defensively. And obviously he's not going to hit 5 of 8 from three. I mean, that's silly to assume anything like that. But he showed that, give him a chance, if he's pressed into service, he's got it in him. That's important for the Celtics to know that he has it in him. Other things happened in this game. We'll take a break. We'll come back and discuss some of the odds and ends from Celtics' win over the Cavaliers.
Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram.
Marcus Smart did not look good in this game, and I thought for a while that he was just going to have an off night. I thought maybe some of the events of the Brooklyn game were still in his head and that he was unable to kind of get past it, and some of the things, the frustrations of the officiating were kind of on his mind. You can see, look, you watch enough of these games and you can kind of tell when guys are a little off and maybe what might be off about them. He clearly, very clearly wanted to complain about certain calls. And you can see him start to and then stop himself. You could see it. I swear, and I wasn't there to talk to him and ask him, not that he would have answered anyway, but I swear that I saw Smart on multiple occasions look at a ref, drop his shoulders, and want to say something, but didn't. And I think it's because that he had that big incident after the Brooklyn game. He said he talked with the league. He is, I don't know if he's getting that fine or what, but, you know, he played, so he's clearly not getting suspended. But I'm sure something else is coming, and he probably doesn't want to have more of, you know, or worsen his reputation. So whatever it was, I think it weighed on him. But tell you what, in the fourth quarter, he stepped up. Now, in the first through, like midway through the third quarter, he was not great. Smart was 3 of 10 with 6 points up until the 6 minute mark of the third quarter. Since then, the second half of the third quarter and the fourth quarter, he was 4 of 7 for 11 points and 4 assists. And so he really kind of stepped up and kind of put whatever it was past them. That was good to see. So shout out to Marcus Smart for kind of figuring that out, I guess. Other things that stood out, Grant Williams. First of all, the Grant Williams coast-to-coast dunk at the end of, what was it, at the end of the first quarter. That was wild. Fun to see. Grant Williams was, he had, well, only one assist, but he was one of the guys that Tatum kind of relied on when he was passing out of a double team, and I thought he moved the ball very well, so I thought Grant Williams did pretty well. Got to shout out Robert Williams, who played a much better game. I called him out on Mass Live in the breakdown of the Brooklyn collapse, and he had some just wildly, wildly terrible defensive plays in that game. But in this game, he kind of corrected a bunch of it. And you know what? He's had that before. He's had games where you look at it and you're like, geez, Rob, what are you doing? And you can't help but call him out because it's just so egregiously bad. And then he looks at film, kind of like says, oh, yeah, you know what? I screwed that up. He's very honest about it. He's honest with himself. And he comes out and does better. So that's, that, you know, a good job from him in this game. Team high plus 14. He had three blocks. He was in better position to make those plays. Five rebounds, 3 of 5 from the field. It just a nice performance for him in some big moments. Well, I don't say big moments against the Cavs, but you know, he in 14 minutes did a pretty nice job. So I think that's worth noting, considering he had some very, very bad moments against Brooklyn. He had some okay moments against Brooklyn, obviously, but. This was a much better game for him. Tremont Waters, gotta, you know, mention him in this game. The Cavs were really trying to target Tremont Waters over and over and over again, trying to get mismatches and post them up or whatever. And I feel like he almost took them out of their game by being on the floor, just by being a small guy on the floor. Because instead of running their offense, the Cavaliers were like, oh my God, Tremont Waters is on the floor. We got to target him. And they went out of their way to target Tremont Waters to the point where they got themselves out of their own offense. And Tremont just kind of, you know, I thought he had a decent game. I thought he had, you know, made some nice plays. You know, a couple of turnovers, but a couple of assists. Got in there, scored a couple of points. I thought he was okay. And my favorite thing, and this is such a basketball nerd thing of me to like, but I hate when NBA players save the ball under an opponent's basket. Like, what are you doing? That's like fundamental CYO shit. You're underneath, you're defending, the ball goes out of bounds on the baseline. You don't go diving after it to save it out of bounds underneath their basket. Because it's probably going to go to them and they're probably going to get a basket out of it because they're playing 5-on-4 because you're in the first row. But players do it all the time. I see it all the time. And I look at them like, what are you doing? Why? That's fundamental. It's not something that you're like, oh, well, it's the NBA. We can do that. Like, no, that's fundamental. You don't do that. Tremont Waters had an opportunity to do that, but he just kind of casually let the ball go out of bounds. Like, he started to chase it, and then he was like, nope, you know what? I'm not going to do that. It was like 5 seconds left on the shot clock. The Celtics set their defense, and they got to stop. That's how you're supposed to play basketball. And it's a little stupid, nerdy thing. But I tell you what, I love these little stupid, nerdy things so much. And shout out to Tremont Waters for, like, making the little proper read. Because you know what? In a game like this, that the Celtics win by 6, there's a close game, it's a tight one, and every possession matters, that's one that matters. If he had tried to save that, and it went directly to a Cav, and they put that in for a layup, who knows how much that changes the dynamic of the game? Because that becomes a momentum changer. That becomes a thing where they get that basket, they get a stop, they come down, they feel good about themselves, they hit a three. That could be a 7-0 run. That could be the beginning of a 7-0 run. You know, that's how those stupid little runs happen. Plays like that. And so that's it. I'm not going to talk too much about about that kind of play. Enes Kanter played in the game. He had some moments, 10 points, 11 rebounds, 5 offensive rebounds. It was a decent matchup for him. But he drives me so crazy when he posts up because he's got no post moves. Enes Kanter has no post moves. His only post move is, I'm bigger and stronger than you, so I'm just going to drive my shoulder into your chest and back you down and throw up that little jump hook. Which, look, Enes Kanter is big, and he's a strong guy. He's in great shape. And probably sit there if he was here next to me and be like, well, yeah, I am bigger and stronger than most of these guys, so why not? I don't know. I grew up on Kevin McHale. I grew up on Hakeem Olajuwon. I grew up watching these great post players, Jack Sigmas of the world, these guys who understood the game with their back to the basket and could use their bodies to feel a defender on their back. You almost had eyes in the back of your head because you could tell where a guy's hand was. You could tell with your back, you could tell exactly how they were positioned, and you could call for the ball and position your body in a way that you could set them up and make a move, a drop step, a jump hook to the middle, and up and under after you've set the guy up a few times. It's just, I understand that post play is not the art that it used to be. I feel like a remnant of the old days, and I'm certainly not saying this as a way to say players nowadays should learn all the post moves. Although I think learning a post, an actual post move or two, is a good thing, because with all of the switching defenses, with all of the mismatches that get hunted out, post play is actually kind of coming back a little bit. Again, it's not going to be like Kevin McHale. And I'm not advocating for that. I'm not trying to be like the people who say, like, you're big, you have to get in the post and you have to make a post move. No. Like, I understand today's NBA has changed. And I'm not fighting that change. I actually like the change. I like the fact that certain things aren't like they used to be. But fundamental basketball is what it is, and I appreciate the art of a good post up. And it is an art. There is an art to it. It's almost like a dance. The footwork that you need to play in the post is phenomenal. You look at some of the post moves that those guys used to make. Kevin McHale was dancing in the pivot, man. He was dancing in there. Now, part of this is that I don't think Enes Kanter can dance. I don't think he's got that level of coordination. It's not who he is. He doesn't have that footwork, but he should learn that footwork. Maybe he should take a dance class, a little tap, a little something. Get those feet moving in better concert with one another. So yeah, so he drives me crazy sometimes when he gets in the post, because it's just like, here we go, boom, boom, boom. Try to back a guy down, throw that little hook. Get your own rebound 2 or 3 times and then put it in. Pad those, the offensive rebounding stats. All right, I'm going to leave it there. Celtics win. It's an important game. Everybody's happy that they won it. Not perfect, but a good starting point. The next game up is the Utah Jazz, which is going to be a tough one. And I'm sure the Jazz are going to come in motivated for some revenge against the Celtics. So that game is coming up on Friday. I will not podcast after that game. And then on Sunday, Thunder at Celtics, I'll be podcasting after that game. So keep an eye out for a podcast Monday, regular Monday podcast, discussing those two games. So subscribe to make sure you get that in your inbox or your whatever device you get to get your podcast. And if you are a subscriber, please rate and review. Good rating, good written review. And share the podcast. Tell everybody, listen to Locked On Celtics Podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.